Hi, everybody. It's Jim Big Guy. The podcast is Be You, The World Will Adjust. Hi, everybody. It's Jim Big Guy. And in continuing part of the summer series, I am bringing people on who epitomize the Be You, The World Will Adjust. And nobody does that more than my dear friend, longtime friend, Tom Curry, who is the managing partner at Lensner Slatt. Previous to that was at McCarthy Tetro. Was it McCarthy Tetro when you were there, Tom? Or?
It was McCarthy Tetro from 1990 on. When I joined the firm, it was McCarthy & McCarthy.
So today I want to talk to Tom because most of my listeners, the only time they ever hear from a lawyer, Tom, is when they need one to defend them or when they're being they're getting a call from one who's suing them or something like that. And just to put in context, Tom, one of my podcasts that I did do was No Good Deed Goes Unpunished, a constant reminder by Tom of that line. I can't tell you, Tom, how many times I use that line. But I thought it'd be really helpful for my listeners, you know, at the core of the message this summer, it's pivot and adapt, pivot and adapt. How are we all pivoting and adapting? Last week, I talked about private schools. Different people have talked about real estates. But, you know, the legal profession is one that really touches us all in so many capacities, whether it's in buying a home or, you know, going to court or doing whatever it is. So I thought it might be helpful for my listeners if you could give me just a little, first of all, just an idea on when everything went boom, what does that mean in a professional services firm? Like how do you adapt to that? How do people that are used to working in close quarters but are independent, how's that changed your world?
It's very interesting. The professional services firms are unlike a lot of other business models. They're in many ways much more complicated. And there are a lot of reasons for that. That people in professional services firms collaborate more than in financial services or in some other corporations. There is not a hierarchical structure, not a chain of command. It is a really flat organization. That makes them particularly fragile and particularly vulnerable, I think, to these kinds of dramatic changes. On the other hand, the deep culture of collaboration allows the organization to be more versatile in some respects and to adapt quickly to these kinds of changes. So when the pandemic, and it struck, as you've said, so suddenly, it first appeared on our radar as a firm at the end of February. It was February 27th. We had a partners meeting. And at the end of the meeting, one of my partners raised a point. We had gone through the agenda. One of my partners raised a point about whether we should remind people that if they're not feeling well, they don't need to come to work. And that's not exactly our culture. It's a really busy organization, a hardworking law firm. And my own personal reaction to that was, look, you know, I don't want to panic people into thinking that coronavirus is in the office. Let's wait a minute about that. By the end of the discussion, I was convinced that we had to do something about this, and we got our business continuity committee to study it. That was a Thursday night. They began their work on the next Monday, and we were home, all of us, everyone, by 2 weeks later, Monday, March 16th.
Wow.
It was a remarkable, remarkable effort by a lot of different people in the firm. So in that respect, and we have not looked back, we have a return to work plan now. There are some people who are in the office. I think I've mentioned previously to you that we go into the office to do virtual court proceedings and so on. Otherwise, everyone has worked from home, every single person.
So just to back up, because there's a couple of points there that I thought were great, and I always love, you know, when you hear things like the business continuity committee, who knew that at one day we would have a business continuity committee, right? But that's the one thing, that's just the humorous thing that I always find when we have these and we talk about them. But the more remarkable thing to me is how, when people are unshackled of any prejudices or any previous thoughts, at how quickly a group of people can come together and in a vacuum create something like they did for you and many other organizations, not even on anybody's radar screen, right? No previous experience. You know, you got to get all 40,000 or in your case, I don't know how many thousands or hundreds of people, like you got to get this done. You got to get this, their ability to do that, right?
It was amazing. And it was a kind of matrix of different resources in the firm. Obviously the human resources and talent group, the IT group was at the center of it. Every single function came together, represented on that committee, and then drew up that plan. Really interesting. And as you point out, you know, although we have a business continuity committee, it's for things that you would imagine, power outages and the kinds of things. Toronto had an experience with SARS nearly 20 years ago. There's no real comparison between that experience and this pandemic. So we certainly did not have in our 2020 strategic plan a chapter called What to Do in the Event of a Pandemic.
Exactly.
We made it work. It was very good.
Let's move to one of the key things in your role is not just managing, you know, the current status of the current partners that you have, but it's also you've got articling students, you've got summer intern students. Those are valuable experiences in a young lawyer's life, right? And how are you dealing with that, with, you know, the articling and the summer students and that whole issue of those people that you would be able to see and interact with on a daily basis? They would be somewhere around. People would build opinions around those people, maybe some not the right way, but some the wrong way or the right way. How are you dealing with that? Because, you know, I've got a very young listenership as well. Just give us some idea on how your firm and you are dealing with that.
So important to maintain the communications. When I took over the role of managing partner, I instituted a set of town hall meetings twice a year. Everyone in the organization gets together in our largest boardroom. It's overflowing, but we give them some information about where we're going, how we're going to get there, and what their roles are. And we celebrate our collective accomplishments. That law firms, I think properly run at least, require a lot of collaboration, a lot of the kinds of things that you speak about and have written about motivation and teamwork are really at the center of what law firms are trying to do. So what we have done is increased the number of those kinds of meetings. We have had, I think, 5 town hall meetings. The most recent of which was last week. They are virtual, and we have almost full attendance. It's been remarkable. People are craving that kind of contact that you're speaking about. In addition to that, we have always had every Friday a get-together that includes not every single person in the firm, but every professional member of the firm for what are called practice points. Every other Friday, those are CLE-type meetings when we will talk about a case that has been decided or perhaps there will be a guest speaker. Those are Friday morning breakfast meetings. On alternate Fridays, we have litigation lunch meetings. They're called, same idea, no formal agenda, but just a reason to get together. So in addition to that, we have meetings for the summer students that you mentioned and the articling students and then separately the associates. So all of those have been going on Microsoft Teams is the platform that we use for most of those. And we have, through that, been able to maintain a level of contact that has managed to help people. Besides that, I have undertaken a kind of informal goodwill tour. I've gone to visit people at home, take a photograph. I'm putting together a little album. I share those with regular emails to the group, to just let them know how we're doing, you know, the latest cases that have been decided that we've been involved in, that kind of thing. Try to really increase the number of ways that we can communicate as a team.
That's awesome, Tommy. I'm sure people really appreciate that personal touch, that leadership, and that interest that not only you as the managing partner, but the leader of your firm provide to people. I'm sure during this period of time, people think, wow, this guy's really something else to do that. To me, it's not surprisingly, that you would do that. I've known you as long as I have, and that's the type of character of individual that you are. So, you know, the world sort of falls into one of two places. Some industries are suffering heavily, and others are sort of collaterally, you know, sort of benefiting. Where's your firm and where's the law industry coming out of this? You guys, are you seeing more cases? Are you busier? Is it more corporate? Is it more litigation? Like, sort of what's the snapshot?
Very interesting question. When this occurred, my first reaction was to restate our budgets and our revenue forecasts, because we were really uncertain about what was going to happen. Would the court be able to function? Would our clients want to bother with the legal problems that we were solving for them? Would they be able to pay our accounts? Those immediate concerns, quite natural and probably shared across the whole profession, have not come to pass in our case. It has more or less been business as usual. I think the reason for that is that is in part the part of the market we occupy. We solve complex legal problems, and those haven't gone away. I think across the profession, there have been a number of firms that have probably seen some decline in their work. Presumably the specialized commercial transactions and so on might be deferred or delayed, as you would know better than me. But overall, I think people have been surprised at the level of activity that has gone on in law firms. Criminal lawyers have seen some change in the way their practice works, of course, because the court has struggled. Some parts of the judicial system have struggled to adapt to this virtual world. The court in which we practice a lot is called the Commercial Court or Commercial List in Toronto. It has not missed a day, and it's just absolutely delivering on its mandate. The broader civil courts across the province have had a little more trouble. They have not been all that well funded, and so their ability to use technology has been limited, but they have quickly adapted. And it's another indication of the point that you were making earlier, the ability of systems, even complex systems, to be resilient. You know, it's funny, if you think about the judicial system, it has more or less operated in the same format for 200 years. When you go to Osgoode Hall, a beautiful national treasure, you see the portraits on the walls of former judges 200 years ago. If they were to climb down from their portraits and go back into the courtroom, not much has changed. They would be able to preside over a hearing in 2020, just as they did in 1820. I think this change has been really remarkable, and some good will come of it.
I think it really depends, and my view of it has been that it really depends whether you've said this thing could go on a lot longer. I actually don't know, but I have to take the movements. You know, you think about how quickly the government's pivoted and adapted to get money into people's hands and probably saving us from widespread panic individually. You know, the legal system is based upon such precedents and repetitiveness and all of that stuff. And that's what people take comfort in, right? One of the things that I do want to talk about is how your life has changed. Because for my listeners, you know, Tom is one of Canada's top litigators. He's used to be in court and used to do the dog and pony show in front of the judges and with a whole team of people and everything else. But that world of yours has changed, hasn't it?
Really has. And so now I've not been back in a courtroom, a physical courtroom, since the second week of March. The courts have started to open and we will be back, but there isn't a strong demand to go back yet. I think people are managing quite well on the technology that you use for your podcasts, Zoom and others. I want to make a point that you pick up a point that you made earlier about young people, you know, for whom this is a remarkable experience and probably a source of great concern and uncertainty. But they are so well placed to be able to come through this with all of the familiarity they have with technology and adaptability, this is going to be, they will be the first to come out of this with this experience having been a positive thing. It will not define their careers. It will be something that they take in stride.
Well, as my son Ed says, you know, welcome to the second once in a lifetime crisis, the first one of his generation. So one of the things that's probably people are wondering, and I know you're not, your background isn't employment law, but you do know there's going to be a lot of dislocation. There's going to be a lot of people let go. And a lot of people have been let go. A lot of people have been furloughed. This activity that's going on must be testing the boundaries of employment law against the backdrop of the current situation, right? This isn't like just someone firing someone. There's a whole new set of circumstances that are going on. Maybe you can sort of give me some perspective, give the listeners some perspective on, like, how's that all going to work here, right?
Yeah, I think that you're right, that the court is going to have to take into account this extraordinary situation and probably allow employers to have some flexibility about these existential crises. You know, our law has developed to be quite protective of employees. Compared to America, a lot of American businesses don't understand when they pick up a Canadian branch plant or something just exactly what the differences are, but they're remarkable, and they are employee centered. The COVID crisis could shift that balance because they're, for the reasons that you've given, if it's a matter of life and death for the organization, I think we can expect to see that the court is going to take that into account in some way or other. I haven't seen the other shoe drop yet because some of these programs that have been initiated by the federal government have provided a bit of cushion and a bit of runway. But if those businesses can't come back and those temporary layoffs become permanent, then that's when these issues are going to have to be determined.
Yeah, it's having been through the situation myself, the courts have been extremely lenient on the side of the employees, and it'll be very, very interesting because, you know, as you know, the court fancies itself precedents and everything else, and so to make that leniency, well, I imagine be a difficult one because, you know, the laws are the laws, right? And maybe at the margin where there's some interpretation left. And I think one of the things that corporations are going to have to do is they're going to have to find a spot when they let people go to negotiate probably better in terms of not getting themselves to sort of 500, 600, 700 people litigating on all of that time and all of that money that goes on. So if you were a strapping young lawyer today, like you were so many years ago, unfortunately for both of us, too many years ago, is the law profession a growing world or is it holding steady? And part of that is, how is technology impacting your profession as well in terms of employment opportunities? I remember you told me just as a sideline, normally you would have crowed to me about getting a great new lawyer. But I remember when I was over at your place, you were talking about the head of technology that you got and how great he was. So that's probably a good start of an indicator.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I think, first of all, the demand is very high. The demand for lawyers is growing, and it's growing in particularly interesting areas, I think. And that demand is not expected to diminish. As business becomes more complex, as government becomes more complex, then lawyers will be in demand. And so I'm always optimistic in speaking to people who wish to pursue career in the law because for that reason. You made the point, I think, off the top of our discussion today that it's everywhere, really. If you were to pick up the Globe and Mail, and recognizing that probably people will be doing that more online than they do at the doorstep. But just take the Globe and Mail, the main section, take the report on business, and do a page turn and identify all of the stories and features and opinions that touch on legal issues. It is almost every page in one form or another. It's everywhere, and that's not going to change. The other thing I think you can see is that there's a real opportunity for law firms to expand the idea of what it is that they do, and therefore for lawyers, young lawyers in particular, to think about what they do. They are expert at solving complex problems, multidimensional problems. And so if you think about the way complex problems are solved in business, well, we've obviously got a lot of big four consulting firms, accounting firms, law firms. And at the center of their work is the same kind of problem they're solving. And I think that's where lawyers, young lawyers in particular, will be able to find exciting opportunities. And that fits nicely with the point that you made about technology too, because the young lawyers have a familiarity with technology that gives them a tremendous advantage to be able to work efficiently, work effectively, and to have command of so much information. What they end up acquiring over their careers is experience and judgment and a savvy about how different dimensions of a problem fit together.
That's great. That's good. That's good to know. So I'm sure the guys at Osgood will be happy because actually, what's going to happen at Osgood this year? Are they going to do online, or what will happen?
Yeah, I think it's certainly the University of Toronto Law School is planning to have people in classrooms, I think, with some modifications. I think that people are, law schools are still evaluating this. We've just entered phase three in the recovery, the provincial recovery plan. But I think you will see people doing a mix of online and in-class attendance. And then, of course, watching closely with health and safety being the primary concern everybody will have. If there is an additional wave, as has been predicted, then easy enough to fall back to the virtual classroom that has been working reasonably well so far.
Well, it's going to be, you know, I said on my podcast last week that a friend of mine I'd been out with had told me about a couple of private schools that he was on the board of, and they'll probably have a $5 to $10 million shortfall as a result of this, right? You know, one of the things I've talked about is this collateral damage, right? Collateral damage that people aren't, you know, sort of, they think at the first level, but how does it all trickle down to, and who's going to pay for it all, right? At the end of the day.
Yeah, no, you're right. There have been a lot of discussions about what it means to pay tuition to an institution, whether it's a high school or a university, when you cannot get the full experience. Are you expected to pay the full tuition? It's going to be an interesting question, particularly because we'll be in this situation for another year at least.
And so have you set a date for, you mentioned earlier, you've got people intermittently coming in and out of the office. Have you tried to hang out a date that sort of says, all things being equal, if we continue to proceed, we're hoping for this time to be back?
We've been looking for some time at September 1 as a date. We have surveyed everyone in the organization, and we're surveying them again now to see what their preferences are. Some people will have health and safety concerns. Some people won't be able to organize childcare, particularly while the school boards are discussing what they're going to do in September. Because we've been able to work successfully from home, I'm not too concerned if September 1 comes and the status quo is maintained. On the other hand, there are many people whose personal circumstances would make it better for them to be able to come to the office. Many of our colleagues are either on their own in small apartments or condominiums, and it would be better if they could get out and safely come back to the office, or they may be there with a roommate or two, and the circumstances working from home are difficult. So we want to give those people some options because it's going to be overall better for them without taking any undue risks. We've got a pretty robust plan at the office in terms of what's going on there centered on health and safety. You'd be quite surprised, maybe, but if you've been in offices, you probably have seen the very same thing. Signs, pathways, masks and disinfectant everywhere. We've had extra cleaning staff in from the beginning. So those efforts will continue and should make it possible for us to be able to go back at a safe distance and not take any undue risks.
Well, that's the earliest I've heard from, but when do you think the courts will go back? When will you be back in front of a judge with your robe and you don't wear the wig, do you anymore? Do you wear the wig still?
No more wigs here. I could use one. No more wigs in Canada. Even England is starting to move off of some of those things. But the court is open now, although I have not been back. Some of my colleagues have been back in a physical courtroom. They have the courts have installed the usual kinds of things: plexiglass, masks are required, that kind of thing. So my own sense is that, although this case, I was just in court last week on something, it was done virtually. The court I was appearing in virtually is hearing people physically, so we could have done that one in person. I anticipate that it will be the fall in my case.
That's great. Tommy, thank you so much for joining me today. It's always a pleasure to see you. And I wish you and your partners great success going forward.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I want to say how much I enjoy speaking to you about all of these issues and how important your thinking and writing has been to me, not just because we're friends, but because it has been a real help in my role as managing partner of the firm. So I'm grateful.
And so as always, my message for the week continues to be pivot and adapt, pivot and adapt. Doesn't matter what industry you're in, whether you're a lawyer, whether you're an accountant, whether you're a podcast producer, pivot and adapt. That's the only thing that we can grab hold of and know that is true every single day, and it will prepare us for the unknown. So once again, everybody, have a great week and stay safe. Be you, the world will adjust. Take care.